The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
Leading off with the big story of the day, Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and T-Mac.
Legend, put it on, and a rebound goal. Ricochet out in front. Another power play goal. And Colorado has tied the game at one. Through it, another rebound goal. Nico Sturm has tied it for Colorado. Audrey back in action, denied by Vasilevsky. Oh, what a play! Colorado thinks this is in. I think it is in. We are looking for the signal from the officials. They're going to take a look at the replay for sure. They think they have won the game. And Vasilevsky is not arguing, although he's hoping for something from the video. Jared Bednar and the Avalanche convinced they have won. And let's take a look. Here's Kadri, makes a great move on Sergachev. It's going to hit Vasilevsky and then the back of the net.
It's up there in the net. I don't know why there was any question unless they thought it was sitting on the top of the netting.
Yeah, I was trying to go far side. You know, I knew I got a pretty good shot off and, you know, might have had a chance. I actually thought it was in originally, but then, you know, he kind of fooled, Vasilevsky kind of fooled me there, and I thought it maybe pinned between his arm, and, you know, he was kind of swimming in the crease, and I thought he might have had it, so it was certainly a few seconds of confusion there, and then, you know, I just saw everybody kind of bull rush the ice, and that's when I knew it was confirmed, so, you know, certainly a team effort on the goal, and it feels nice to get it done.
Thanks to our listeners in Erie for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. I think I'm going to buy a Nazem Kadri sweater.
Well, that's easier said than done.
I don't care if he's not here anymore.
Took my boys down, team store, prior to the start of the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a sweater. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Couldn't get a Kadri. They don't have them there. So you're going to have to custom order one.
Well, I'll just ask him for one of his.
Or that.
Or Buds. Actually, he doesn't talk to me off the ice. But I say hi to him.
So, if you're looking at the spectrum of all-time great hockey calls, do you believe in miracles is number one. What we just played from last night might be on the other end of that spectrum.
Well,
I mean, it's not their fault.
What were they going to... Boy, that would have been a sharp broadcaster to actually have seen that.
Nobody saw it. I'm not blaming
them. We're watching it, and I'm next to my boy Jesse, and I'm like, you know, like that, because there were so many opportunities. And Jesse goes, I think it's in. Somehow he saw it. I don't even know how. And the reaction was wild, because it was Bo Byram who skated all the way down the ice. Like, he saw it from way far away. And I think he saw it from way far away because just where he was angled, he could just, excuse me, kind of catch it where nobody else could.
Yeah.
And then you had the guys on the bench. When Bo started pointing at it, I think the guys on the bench could see where he was pointing, and then they could actually see the puck. And they started pointing, but they didn't jump off the bench right away because the play, nobody knew what was going on. So it did take a second, but there was an eruption from the bench before they poured out. But the reaction is comical because nobody knew where to go because Kadri had skated away from the play. He was like at center ice.
Yeah.
And so they kind of rushed on to where the puck was, but Kadri wasn't even there. And then they kind of all collected and... It was unbelievable.
It was a little bit similar. Was it the Nashville series when the shot went through the net?
Burakovsky's.
And you didn't know it was a goal. And
crazy.
Was kind of looking around like,
they played for another 2 minutes.
Right, right. Well, this one was sort of like, well, if the puck's not in the net, where the heck did it go, right? Like, that was going to, that riddle had to get solved at some point. But we talked a lot on Tuesday about replay. Can you imagine if they'd have gone to the replay to look at whether or not there were six men on the ice and they overturned that sucker on a technicality and you lose the moment of Nazem Kadri beating the best goaltender on the planet in his first game back from an injury because some techno nerd in Toronto broke it down to the microsecond and said, well, he technically wasn't off the ice. But that's why replay stinks.
No.
Yes. James. Last night's prime example, NHL gets it. They just said,
it's,
you know what, we're not going to bother.
Review. There are other penalties that are reviewable. That's not one of them. It's not one of them for the purpose that you saw last night. It's a subjective call by the ref because there's a certain flow to transitioning on and off the ice that using replay would be ridiculous for, because it would harm the nature of hockey itself. You would have to, what, tag up on the board? I mean, it was, what are we, tag team wrestling? I mean, it'd be right. Silly. It would literally ruin the flow of hockey. That's why it's a subjective penalty, and that's why it's generally not called unless the puck actually, you know, goes in the direction of somebody in play when there's six guys on the ice. Had the puck gotten under Nathan MacKinnon's skates, the penalty probably would have been called.
What percentage of line changes do you think at some point for a split second there are actually six guys on the ice?
90 to 95%.
That would be my guess too, is it happens all the time. Because it's almost impossible not for it to happen. Otherwise,
course,
you're going to be playing with four. And nobody wants to play with four. Again, you're climbing over a wall in pads and skates.
Or to get a little jump start, you get on the ice and you wait for the guy to come off. And then you jump, you know, he's supposed to be within 5 feet of the boards. And that's what happened. Kadri was on the ice. MacKinnon was coming off. And when MacKinnon was about halfway to the boards, but clearly coming off the ice,
yeah,
Nazem got into the flow. Who knew that Darcy Kemper, who is the first goalie to ever get an assist in a walk-off sort of overtime moment ever in the history of the NHL, record books, who knew that instead of just dumping it to Bo Byram, which is the play that happens 99 out of 100 times, would make it a very aggressive, fast pass up to Atturi Lehkonen, who would drill Kadri, who was cheating it a little bit, right on the tape. And then what Kadri has to do? Split two guys, draw the puck under a stick, get to his forehand, and the only shot he can make, because I was watching for five straight days, the only shot he could actually make is a flip. But unbelievably, he gets into a position where the flip is the best shot to have. He can't hit a slap shot. He can't do a hard wrister. He can't make a hard pass. He can't do faceoffs. And James, he was irrelevant in that game to the degree where some of us were talking about, boy, did they just sit him on the bench?
Yeah.
Because he was really doing more harm than good, not his fault, but it's just the nature of his injury. So to think that this somehow was unfairly slanted to the Avalanche is ridiculous. Preposterous. And you know what? We got to give John Cooper, who said this today.
What's great about today is that it's not yesterday.
That's right.
That's my new favorite line.
And he did apologize.
So, it's funny because you need to know you're an emotional game, and I found it odd that they got that wide open in the play, but there's nothing you can really, you know, from our angle of the bench, and the reviewing, like, whether the puck's in the net. So the only way I can find out is I have to go back in the room and look at the tape. So you do, and then you have to face all of you 5 minutes after an emotional loss. And so I apologize, you know, for last night, because that's what you get when you have to speak to the media right away.
Okay. I feel him on that, by the way.
Totally. And look, if you're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan, do you want a coach that's not ticked in that situation? Of course not. He's a competitive guy. That's a heartbreaking loss. If you win that game, it's 2-2, and you got a good shot to win this thing. Now you're down 3-1. You got to play 2 out of 3 in Denver. You're done. You're toast.
Here's Kadri after the game about the incident.
Yeah, I was trying to go far side. You know, I knew I got a pretty good shot off, and, you know, I might have had a chance. I actually thought it was in originally, but then, you know, Vasilevskiy kind of fooled me there, and I thought it maybe pinned between his arm, and, you know, he was kind of swimming in the crease, and I thought he might have had it. So it was certainly a few seconds of confusion there, and then, you know, I just saw everybody kind of bull rush the ice, and that's when I knew it was confirmed. So, you know, certainly a team effort on the goal, and It feels nice to get it done. Second part of that question, I'm not quite sure, you know, what he's thinking, why he shouldn't have counted. I mean, that kind of confuses me a little bit. You know, the puck hit the back of the net. End of story, so not sure why you'd say that.
It was confusing afterwards because Cooper just didn't say what the hell he was talking about. He was kind of teasing, like, wait till I talk tomorrow moment.
Right, right.
So meet me at the airport.
Wait till you see the evidence.
Right, wait till you see the Zapruder film.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when he looked at it, it's like, oh, yeah, that's hockey. That's actually how hockey's just played.
He was the defense attorney with an opening statement last night and then didn't bring any evidence to the case.
Oh, right.
But look, I get why he was
the pillow guy
frustrated.
Thinks his evidence is a little weak.
Right.
All right. Here's Bednar about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to. I mean, that's part of the game. It's a fluid game. You know, you change it on the fly. Everything happens. I mean, you look at that clip, if you back that clip up, and I did multiple times, you're ready to see exactly what they're talking about. And Tampa's got two guys jumping around with their D coming off the ice from the zone. And I count 7-6 at one point. So that is what it is. That's the way the game's played. I don't see it as a break, non-break. I think it's actually nothing.
There you go.
Well, and
it's actually nothing.
Here's the thing. You would have to take it and put it side by side with other line changes.
Right.
And point out that it's different, right? That they got an advantage. They did something that is abnormal. They took advantage of the situation, the fact that the refs weren't calling anything, and it was unfair. But if you compare it to other screenshots we've seen of other line changes, it's like this happens all the time. So it's a silly thing to complain about when it's the norm.
The only reason it would be unfair is if that sixth man was actually somehow intrinsically involved in the play.
Right.
Cadre being on the ice and leaving a bit early. That's just the nature of the sport, James. It's why penalties aren't called and they put away their whistles. There's just some ways of the sport being played that are widely accepted. And if the puck happens to bounce your way, well, heck, good for you. Because there's nothing that Condry did with the line change with McKinnon that their guys aren't doing the entire game too.
Yeah, and I like when a game is officiated that way. I can't stand if you're watching a football game and you got that ref who's going to call the holding penalty away from the play that had no impact on the play, but he's got to throw his flag and let everybody know that he saw the holding penalty. It's why the Gabe Landeskog offside in San Jose 3 years ago was so frustrating.
So frustrating.
Because he has nothing to do with the play. It didn't impact it at all.
And the difference is offsides can be reviewed.
Right.
And too many men cannot.
And shame on him. You're supposed to go on the other side.
You want to go through that whole thing?
No. But
want to talk about where the door is and that it was sticky and there was a concert the night before? And
right.
We can go down that wormhole if you want.
But the biggest problem with it was they called something and overturned and took away a goal little technicality that didn't impact the play.
Here's what
that's annoying.
And I would do this in football, too. Do you remember when the Broncos got the touchdown? Gosh, I think it was Chris Harris. Maybe the Bengals or some team like that. And a big fat offensive lineman was barely touched by one of our defensive linemen. Way behind the play. I mean, way behind the play, but he got touched a little bit and he flopped. And, you know, you can't do that. And it came back. You can't have something so punitive in sports if it's just away from the play and has no impact whatsoever.
Correct.
You know, my idea on that is that it's a touchdown. It's like, give it a 5-yard penalty from the touchdown. Okay, take the touchdown off the board. It's 1st and 5 at the 5. Let's go. You can't place the ball back at the spot of the penalty when the guy just flopped and was just way out of the play anyway. Gabe Landeskog's going off against San Jose. His intention was to be off the ice. He wasn't involved in the play whatsoever. He made no moves to be part of the play. It shouldn't matter. If you're going to take yourself off the field, and part of the field in hockey is a freaking door, you should be gracious enough to understand if you're at the door, you're off the ice.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's the difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law.
Correct.
Right? And people who have no imagination just want to go off the letter of the law versus what is it actually there for and what is it trying to prevent? And it's trying to prevent somebody from getting an unfair advantage. Gabe Landeskog didn't give the Avs an unfair advantage, and what happened last night didn't either.
No.
So therefore, it shouldn't be called. And as you watch the postseason, and last night it was a prime example of it. Hockey, the way they officiate, especially in the playoffs, It's the best in all of sports. How many games? What is it now? They're 15-3? 18 games.
Yeah.
How many games have we said, man, that really came down to the officiating? Maybe game three with the overturn call and then with the two sort of weak power plays that Tampa got.
Okay.
Maybe. But still, from then on, there was nothing. It is the one game where it's like, you know what? It's just settled on the ice. The NBA is the worst. And if you want to go down a wormhole, go down the Whistleblower podcast. It's about Tim Donaghy and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that'll make you relook at how you watch NBA games. NHL games, you at least walk away feeling, you know what? It was determined by the guys on the ice. More so than in any other sport. And had they done something, it's not reviewable, so they couldn't have. But had that call been made last night, it would have been like, you're going to take away this magical moment, a Disney movie, for a little technicality? Like, that's the one thing about John Cooper's complaint that I do have an issue with, of you really wanted this game to come down to a technicality. Does anybody want that? Even the guy that lost, do you want that? I think the answer is no.
I think it's fun to make fun of them, and I loved, like, the Zoakley Show playing the Justin Timberlake Cry Me a River, because I just burst out laughing because that's how it sounded. But he did mitigate it, and we're just being a little phony here if we don't recognize he did retract it earlier today.
Sure.
It's a lot more fun to make fun of the dude, but he did retract it. Adrian Dater, our fan Avalanche insider, courtesy of Bud Light, an official beer sponsor of the Avs. All right, Adrian, how would you break down John Cooper and his allegations and the controversy that really is not going to be, but was trying to be manufactured?
You know, D-Mac, I thought it was a little bit of trying to have both sides today a little bit. I don't know if he officially retracted what he said. I think he said something like, well, you know, they missed it, but that happens in hockey. You know, it's a shame that we, you know, they missed it. I don't think he fully retracted that as much as people think. But that said, look, I think John Cooper is a good coach, a good guy. Yeah, you say stuff immediately after a game. You need to give some leeway on that, right? Everybody says stuff after a game. I certainly am one who has said stuff after a game. You know, and just have to sort of, you know, little time settle in. I think John Cooper knows that it wasn't the difference-making play that won the Avalanche game. And, you know, like Jared Bednar said today, I think there were seven Tampa guys on the ice.
Well, yeah, if you're using the same sort of just physically being on the ice, it was right. Like 7-on-6. That's just not the spirit of line changes, though. I mean, right. You know, it's hockey, and that's where it got muddled. Let me just fast forward a little bit. The story of Nazem Kadri, and I think it's a total story. I think it goes from the suspension and the elimination of the Avalanche in the second round to the Knights to the redemption of Kadri, the death threats, and the racist death threats towards him, the incredible hat trick, the injury to Kane, and his return. That is a story of epic proportion. And to me, as much as this season rides on the shoulders of Nathan MacKinnon, I think the story of the Avalanche this year is the return of Kadri.
I agree, D-Mac. I think that's spot on. That's bang on. I think that this guy came into camp with a mission. I remember talking to him last July. I was in a hotel room in New Hampshire, and I called him after the suspension, about a month later, and I talked to him for like 30 minutes, and I wrote a long story about it. And the whole theme of it was, man, I'm sorry what happened. I didn't mean it. I just want to come back and prove myself one more time for the Avalanche organization and fans if they will give me the chance. And he got the chance. I think the Avalanche really, you know, stood by him. Didn't throw him under the bus at all. And he has absolutely accomplished what he wanted to do. From that call to here now, despite some injuries and, you know, the stuff he went through in St. Louis with that garbage, he has withstood it all. And now he is one game away from one win away from winning the Stanley Cup. And he was he was the heroic figure last night with a broken thumb. So this guy, I mean, I don't know if it'll be a movie made about him, but he should have a really, really nice long-form story made about him, what he's accomplished in the last year and what he's overcome. I hope to write that story.
What's your prediction for Game 5?
You know, I think the odds are going to be tight. I think they're going to be nervous. We've seen a lot of Avs games in the past where they thought they could wrap it up at Game 5 and things just turn sour. So I'm not overconfident, but I do think the Avalanche should win. I think they will win. I think it's going to, but it's been a year long. The Avalanche have come through all year long. They have one more test to pass, but boy, that was a big win last night, man. I mean, you know, you talk about coming home 2-2 tied as opposed to up 3-1, big difference, big difference. So you can't take anything lightly. This is a team that's won two cups in a row. So if they were playing like the New York Rangers or something and hadn't been there before, I'd be like, yeah, this is going to be a rout in Game 5. But this is still the lighting. Don't take them lightly. But if the Avs do their thing, I think they should win.
I appreciate it. Adrian Dater, our fan Avalanche insider, ColoradoHockeyNow.com, joins us courtesy of Bud Light, an official beer sponsor of the Avs. Deeper dives into what's happening tomorrow night, including just the aspect of going to the game, what it would cost and where this sets in Colorado history, plus the water cooler. Arch Manning has made a decision, and I'm pretty surprised. How much money did Texas offer Arch Manning? That's the only thing I can figure out. We'll talk about it coming up in the water cooler next.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
We find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and D-Mac.
What would you say you do here?
James Verlad in for Tyler.
You'll see people in the crowd and increasing, and you'll see players on the field take the hook 'em horn sign that everybody does who's affiliated with the University of Texas, pinky and forefinger up, making a hook 'em horns and pointing it down.
All right, well, perhaps that will be used against Arch Manning, the number one recruit in the 2023 class, the son of Cupper, the nephew of Eli and Peyton, the number one quarterback we've been looking at, perhaps projectable quarterback after Russell Wilson.
Oh, wow, that's really a...
When Uncle Peyton has an equity stake and is president of football in 5 years?
That would be fine.
I'd be
down with that.
Is now going to Texas. Why do you think Arch Manning, with his dad and namesake, Archie, going to Ole Miss, as Eli, and Uncle Peyton going to Tennessee, coming from New Orleans, decided to go to the University of Texas?
Well, we may find out that he's the new spokesperson for the Austin Metro Ford dealers. That may happen soon. But aside from money, I think it's because he has an opportunity to kind of write his own legacy, right? Like, if you go to Alabama or you go to Georgia and you win a national championship, yeah, it's cool. But if you go to Texas, where they have a ton to work with and it's a talented roster, so it's not mission impossible, and you write that ship and turn that thing around, you're a legend forever, right? Instead of just another guy at Alabama who won a championship. I think it's a really smart decision by Arch Manning. I think he's going somewhere again where he's going to have an opportunity to win. There's a ton of talent. He's not taking a huge, huge gamble, but they have been down for nearly two decades now, really, since Vince Young was there.
Inevitably, Arch Manning will be a top five pick in the NFL draft when he comes out in 3 years, unless he really likes college.
Ballroom dancing like Matt Leinart.
Matt just loved L.A., man. That dude, you know what?
Okay, hard to blame him.
Hard to blame him. And he was a big star there in L.A., and his best days were as a college student. He tried to do it as long as he could.
Yeah, he knew it.
That being said, it was funny. I was seeing some video of Arch Manning today, and I'm like, wow, look what happens with puberty and lifting weights. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
I like the concept of charting your own course because he's going to have a lot of eyeballs on him no matter what. It was mind-blowing last August to be at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and when Tyler and I walked out, there was a young man signing autographs. It was Arch Manning signing autographs at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Heady stuff for a 17-year-old. So perhaps going to some place, that's big, that will get a lot of attention, but it gets to be his. is perhaps the way to go. And what a signing for Texas. They haven't had anything like this in forever.
Yeah, I mean, huge signing. But, yeah, if he goes to Tennessee, the expectations are going to be high anywhere. But it's just, again, you're living in that shadow of your uncles or your grandpa. Just seems like this is a much, much, much better way for him to go. Smart decision.
Next up.
We don't talk about Bruno, no, 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 no. We don't talk about Bruno.
Shohei Ohtani is doing incredible things. Amazing things, James. As a pitcher and a hitter, he struck out a career-high 13 over 8 innings of 2-hit ball. That's the day after he drove in, 8 runs? Okay. What are we seeing here with Shohei Ohtani? Is there something unrealized that we better be prepared for? Or was this just kind of a freaky 2-day sort of thing? There's no way he can keep up this particular pace.
Well, maybe not this pace, but continuing to be a dominant pitcher and a dominant hitter, I think he's shown that he can do both of those at a high level. I don't think this story and what he does gets the appreciation it deserves. It's remarkable. It's unlike anything anybody's done in decades. It's going back to Babe Ruth. It's remarkable.
I find it awesome. The problem is, we work here in radio, and sometimes people have said to me, well, aren't you like Howard Stern? And I'm like, yeah, he's probably the most successful radio guy, of all time. And you got to compare me to, I'm just trying to be, on even keel with James Merrillat. I'm not trying to, be the greatest guy of all time. The only thing that bugs me about Shohei Ohtani isn't watching him, because I love watching him. It's that dummies out there think that pitchers should hit. There's still morons out there that, don't even tell me. Please don't tell me.
I'm in that group. He's showing it's possible.
I am just moving on. What are you looking forward to the most in the NBA draft? What makes tonight interesting?
Do the Nuggets do something? I don't want to hear at the end of the night that they tried. That's what Mike Zinger said. They're going to try. Don't try. Do something. Be better at the end of the night.
Is Monte Morris with the Nuggets by the end of this night?
Yeah, I think he is. I think they like him. I think he's
Bones Highland here with the team at the end of this night?
Yes.
So you think they're just going to use the draft picks?
Yes. I think we're going to hear they tried. They tried to make moves. It just didn't happen.
You think they'll stay at 21 and 30, or do you think they'll package a move up?
I think they stay at 21 and 30.
And just get whatever's good there.
The new version of Zeke Nagy. That's what they get tonight. That's not what they should do, but I think that's what's going to happen.
What's wrong with Zeke Nagy?
He's a fine player, but...
You're not a Zeke Nagy fan?
How much did he help him against the Warriors?
He'll be better as he's... That's not the way it goes.
They're in their window. They need guys that can help them now.
Okay, so
not then down the road.
They should package and trade.
They should, but we're going to hear that they tried. And I'm tired of hearing that they tried. They tried to re-sign Jeremy Grant.
Is there anything more confusing than trying to follow along on TV the NBA draft where trades and deals and you just I know they're having a watch party down there and I appreciate the invite and I know there's free pizza and all. It is so confusing watching the NBA draft.
Yeah.
That to me, it's better consumed the day after. And I'm happy our guy Jake Shapiro is going to be going down there and killing it. But I'll just try to hang on for dear life and follow from home and then put it together tomorrow.
Well, and the ridiculousness of, we all know the trade happened, but here's the guy, here's Kobe Bryant in his Hornets hat. It's silly.
All right, I'll give you 30 seconds. Tell me why, that's it. Tell me why pitchers should hit.
Well, I like that you have to think as a manager when you have that spot in your order. It brings strategy into the game. It makes you make decisions late in the game of, do you want to go to your bullpen? What do you want to do? The double switch. Anybody could manage in the American League. You could just have that be a prize. Hey, it's you get to manage night. And you fill out the card and then sit in the dugout and eat sunflower seeds. I like the strategy that comes with it. The other part of it is, there's no reason to me why pitchers should not be able to hit better than they do. Shame on them that they don't work at it more and get in a position where they can help themselves. Now, are they going to hit to the level of Ohtani? No. But to not be able to go up there, I guarantee you when they were in high school, they all hit 675.
James.
Like, why can't they do it?
I just let you know, I'm a good driver. I know how to parallel park. I know how to change a tire. Do you want me to fix your engine? I know how to do some things with a car, and I'm better at some things than I'm an expert. Would you trust me to fix your engine if there was a problem?
If you worked around mechanics every single day and you didn't pick up anything by osmosis and couldn't help me with my car on the side of the road, I would blame you.
Then blame me. But I'm telling you, that's how guys get to the major leagues. They focus on one thing, not both. Asking pitchers to hit is an insult to the process of what hitters have gone through to be able to hit at that level.
They sit around for 4 or 5 days between starts and play long toss. They got plenty of time to work on their hitting.
And now you're insulting the process of what it takes to actually be a major league pitcher and what goes into that.
No, I'm not.
There's
no process.
You are.
There isn't.
I'm going to speak Canadian throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs.
When you're up on the mound.
You're obviously against something here that makes sense.
No, when you're on the mound and you got to study who you're going up against that night and you got to know. There's a process to that. There is not a process to your 5 days off. There's a what? You got to get a massage?
James.
That's the process?
I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're trying to say, but you realize that the vast majority of pitchers have stopped hitting by the time they were 14 or 15 years old.
Shame on them. Shame on the people who told them to do that.
Okay, fine. But shame on everybody, I guess. That doesn't mean they can do it.
I think it's silly that you can be a big fat guy who doesn't even need to come to the ballpark with a glove and you can impact the game. DH is a ridiculous notion.
Do you think the kicker impacts the game?
Well, I think position players should have to be the kicker and the punter. I do.
Leatherhead.
Can you imagine Cortland Sutton kicking the game-tying extra point?
It'd make things more interesting.
It would.
The going to the game. What are you going to... This is where we need a little feedback. 303-713-1043. What are you thinking? What are you seeing out there? If tomorrow night is a night to remember of all time here in Denver, Colorado. What are you willing to do to be there, or what's your plan at least? Dying to know what the thought is. 303-713-1043. This is The Drive on the Fan.
Reacting to Nas's OT winner that puts Colorado one win away from the cup. Here's The Drive with Tyler Columbus and D-Mac.
What are you going to do tomorrow night in terms of going to the game? We are seeing some outrageous ticket prices. James Marilat in for Tyler Columbus. According to SeatGeek, the lowest ticket fee is $1,700. Glass tickets with fees between $8,000 and $12,000. Woo!
That's a lot of dough.
What does it mean to be at something that is inevitably historic or potentially historic? And what does it mean to be in downtown Denver tomorrow night, James?
I think being in Denver, downtown Denver, if they win it, and we're going to be doing this at DenverFan.com, we're going to be following the cup. We're going to see where's it at. We're going to be tracking it. I think that's really cool. That could cost you, you know, cost of a few beverages. Maybe a cover charge here or there, depending on where they go. But, you know, you can do that. You can be involved with that. You'll have some stories to tell. Look, being in the building tomorrow night would be awesome. I'd love to be there. But there's a number that everybody can justify in their mind, and that number, for me, is way below $1,700 a ticket. It just, you know, especially in a game where they could lose and go to Tampa for game 6.
No doubt about it.
Right? So I got
no doubt about it.
I got three boys and we're going to spend $8,000 to go there tomorrow and watch them lose. And they play like they did against St. Louis in game 2.
It happened.
I mean,
you know what's crazy? When you go to these arenas, and man, are the for all the excitement we feel with the Avalanche, obviously the other teams feel for them. It is something. Because we're pulling for the Avalanche here. I'm trying to be a nice little journalist in the whole thing. So we're not cheering or jumping up and down or clapping. But what do you think? I'm not happy that the Avalanche win? Of course we want the Avalanche to win. We just got to, you know, kind of be a little professional up there. But when you walk through the crowd of these people with all these expectations, and I've done this now in Nashville, St. Louis, Edmonton, and now Tampa, it is something else. I mean, you can feel the heartbreak and when it just sucks out of your soul. But then again, if it wasn't exciting and there wasn't a potential that you would be leaving a building, perhaps despondent,
sure,
why would you have excitement? You'd just be going to wrestling.
Yeah, the possibility that it could be a heartbreak is what makes it
exciting,
compelling, and interesting.
Right.
It is.
So what is that value worth?
I had a lot of that last night sitting on my couch for free.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, I really
you
did.
Don't, you don't think you have to be there?
No. No. Me and my sons were glued to the TV and had my mom and dad over, and it was awesome, and it was a good time, and you know, we were into it, and we'll have that memory, and they go out in the street, and they're playing street hockey with their cousins in between, you know, during intermissions, and then we're coming back in and watching it. Like, I'm fine with that. I'm not going to criticize anybody who spends this kind of money. Now, I guess I might if you're, you know, not paying your rent or, you know, buying groceries because of that. But look, if you got it and you want to spend it on that, that's fine. We all do things with our money that other people would think is silly. Right. If you have a hobby and you're, you know, putting it into classic cars, or you like to go out to expensive dinners and have that experience, like, whatever, do it. It's your money. Live your life. So if you want to do this, that's fine. But I can't justify it. I mean, $1,700 a ticket. We could go on a, you know, week vacation in the Bahamas for that kind of money. It's silly. It's ridiculous. There is part of me, too, that thinks like, man, that does price out a lot of people that I would put in the category of true fans,
mm-hmm.
right? The diehards.
Mm-hmm.
That just, you know, and you look at, I love sports documentaries and stuff on NFL Network or HBO or whatever, and you see stuff from back in the 70s and the 80s, and the crowds were different, D-Mac. They were, right? It was a little bit more of a, for lack of a better term, a little bit more of a blue-collar crowd that was living and dying with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't take an economist to figure out. At $1,700 a ticket, that's not a blue-collar crowd. It's just
nope,
not.
It certainly isn't.
And that's a bit of a shame. But look, we're going to be downtown.
The people who are being rewarded, though, the people who are really being rewarded are the people most dedicated, though. They're the season ticket holders.
Sure.
And you don't have to be a super wealthy person to be a season ticket holder. You don't. You have to invest your money wisely, and you have to be pragmatic and think ahead. But anybody can be a season ticket holder if you're willing to invest, what, $35, $100, $4,000 a year? I mean, over the course of an entire season, that's not so crazy.
Yeah, it's not bad. And then, you know, you're not going to go to 41 games, so you're using them for business and giving them away, or you're selling them, or you're doing whatever. You're probably recouping something.
You give yourself
off of it.
Priority when it comes to the playoffs, and then you're just paying face value.
Sure, but that also has been a 21-year play up to this point, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's been a long time since they've gotten to this stage, so you got to invest for a long time. And look, I've done it. I, you know, with Bronco tickets, they've been in my family since before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason is, hey, you want to have those opportunities. But I've also gotten to the point where I just prefer, and HDTV was the tipping point. Because if you watch like The Drive and watch the old video of that, you can hardly tell what's happening. So it was much, much better to be at the stadium and you could see things. Now, and leagues are facing this, NFL in particular, it's much, much better to be home. I can get the replays. You know, if in Power Field, if it's a controversial call, they're not going to show it. I can get the replays. I can keep track of my fantasy team. You go to Empower Field, half the time they have stats up from last week. Like, oh, Mahomes threw four touchdowns. Wait, he's on a bye. Like, I mean, it's just not a great experience. It's a lot of times better at home. Tomorrow's different, though. You're there for history.
You're here for history.
There's a vibe to the building that you can't get by being at a bar.
If you're there for history tomorrow, are you also there for the beginning of a legacy?
Hopefully. That's what we're going to
Because in 2001, did we expect them to keep going?
Yeah, and then they did until the lockout. They were competitive. They didn't win another one, but wasn't it the year after or 2 years after that they lost that 7-0 game?
To me, we knew Bork was going away. There's nobody like that on the Avalanche right now. Are they going to keep Kadri? I don't know. Probably not. Which kills me. I'm going to buy a Kadri sweater anyways because he's my guy. Of all the guys on the team, he's my guy.
But why are they not going to keep him?
Because
it's not a cap space issue.
Well, I hope they do keep him.
So,
but you've got to make a humongo decision between him and Nichushkin and Burakovsky and, frankly, McKinnon. I mean, there's no choice on McKinnon. You're just going to pay McKinnon.
That's an easy one.
Right.
I fall into the very simple fan category. Pay them all. And your job is to figure out how to pay them all. Your job is to keep the team
together. Well,
you
realize if you do
pay
that,
them all.
You're going to have to go low budget on the goaltender.
Well, it's worked this year.
The linoleum floors have been perfect.
Wait,
right?
What happened to your article?
No. It's true. They do have linoleum floors, but sometimes you come in with muddy boots, and you're glad you have linoleum floors.
Sure.
The product's been around a long time for a reason.
You just buy them up.
Quality.
Football Force next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.